2001, what a year it was on Inside Motorsport.
Quite amazing. The Murray Bridge fans have been the best bunch since we've started the series this year. They're very vocal. They really enjoy their racing. They were doing Mexican waves and really cheering their locals on.
Feeling that it doesn't happen very often, so when it does, we'll take full advantage of it. But a little bit of everything, and that's if we can transform that over to the top 15 for tomorrow and come away with a faster time, then we can see good work so far.
The issue for us really is making certain get up to speed, and we can stop it though. That's not the problem.
And Super Cheap Auto, it really isn't a name that you'd link to Jaguars at all. Super Cheap's really popped up and is taking the country by storm. The stores are popping up everywhere, and you're part of the success behind that.
Yes, correct. I'm the managing director for Super Cheap Auto, and the business has been around over 25 years, in fact, but it's expanded a lot over the last...
I haven't got the words to explain it. It's been just an incredible, awesome weekend, and so happy and proud at the moment to the Kiwi here in New Zealand, and it's just been an awesome day.
Touring Car Championship, it was just fantastic. But again, taking nothing away from Mark, he was just out there having fun, and Sandown, he's talking about it's going to be big. He is just going to go out and race very hard.
Seventh time when we went to the finals at Vegas this year, so I'm sure if we competed at those eight races, we'd definitely be in the top 10 pretty solidly.
Tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Competitors from 34 countries around the world are making their final preparations for the Dakar Rally, one of motorsport's most grueling events, as the BBC's Joe Parson reports.
Ahead of the competitors lies a route of around 6,000 kilometres in Africa, taking them over rocky roads and sand dunes. Two of the stages, including the penultimate one, are marathon stages of around 1,500 kilometres, designed to test to the limit the competitors' strength, driving skill and navigational ability. Last year, Jutta Kleinschmidt made history when she became the first woman to win the event, taking the honours after a bitter duel with her former teammate Jean-Louis Schlescher. Kleinschmidt's back again in her Mitsubishi this year, with a Japanese factory looking for a record-breaking seventh win. Schlescher too returns in a modified version of the Renault-powered buggy he designed himself, looking to add to his victories of 1999 and 2000. Leading the Nissan Challenge will be Stefan Peter Hansel, who won the motorcycle category a record six times.
But as the race sets off, it's not without environmentalists once again jumping on the bandwagon and protesting against motorsport going on through the wilderness areas that this great rally does take in.
This is Alex Tagliani from the Polaris Foresight team, and I wish everybody happy holidays.
Hi, I'm Paul Tracy with Team Cool Green. I want to wish everybody a happy new year and a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Hi, this is Kenny Brack with Target Chip Ganassi Racing. I want to wish you all a Happy New Year and a Merry Christmas, or as we say in Sweden, God jul och gott nytt år.
Hey, this is Patrick Tarkarazzi.
I want to wish everybody a good Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from Team Players Foresight, and I hope you're going to be watching the races next year. Et c'est Patrick Carpentier, j'espère que vous allez avoir un joyeux Noël et puis vous allez regarder toutes les épreuves la saison prochaine. Merci.
The Sprint Car World Series never has a moment of rest. Wade Onger joins us on the line. And Wade, it is an interesting time as you once again hit Speedway City, and now you're at Niora for tonight's racing.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to stop, Craig. I'm fairly new to all this, although we're used to being involved with a series, but we're not on this professional level and full-time level, it would seem. And yeah, we raced at Horsham last night, the Blue Ribbon Raceway in Horsham, which was a real tyre-frying track. Just about all the guys tore up their tyres, and it was a bit of a shock result for some of the guys in the minor placings, although Max Dumsney, who won at Speedway City, he won the $10,000 to win event, then backed up last night at Horsham and won again, so he is on fire. Second across the line was Brad Furr, who's really starting to come on strong, and third was Danny Smith, so it was good to see him have a good result. But Donny Schatz was running in third, Craig, and blew a tyre with two laps to go, and so did fourth placed Brooke Tatnall. So that gives you an idea. There were seven cars that blew tyres in the main event last night.
It is always interesting when you get to tracks like Horsham and the more traditional dirt tracks, with everyone getting so used to clay, getting it sideways and the big California slides, as they like to call them, are something that we don't get to see a lot of.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a great spectacle, I don't think, and the guys, it's too expensive for them to keep doing that. Whilst some of the racing was good and it's fun to watch guys smoking right rear tyres, you have to realise that there is a very real expense that's attached to that, and you know yourself with your commitments with Glenn that racing costs money, and it costs even more money when you're chewing up tyres. And some of the teams that they spent between $1,600 and $2,000 on tyres, because they weren't just eating up the right rear, they were eating the left rear. And I know that a lot of teams had to change both the right rear and the left rear after every heat race, so you can imagine the 30 lap main a little bit dusty.
Yes, you would have been looking for a red flag there just to throw a few new shoes on the cars.
Yeah, and fuel. I mean, and the other really scary part of the whole deal was weight. Because, you know, when you shave all the rubber off the tyres, you lose a lot of weight. Well, same with fuel. You burn off the fuel, you lose weight off the rear tops. All of a sudden, you could potentially drop 26 to 36 pounds of weight. And with these guys having to run to a weight limit, it can be quite a scary thing if they don't make the weight limit.
Mm. Max Dumsney, I know a couple of races ago you did mention just how it seems like Mad Max is in the best form of his career. He is continuing on during this festive season.
Yeah, he's absolutely on fire at the moment. Max has been in the top three on every occasion. It's freakish, actually. I remember sort of hearing Donny Schatz say, well, you know, Max hasn't had his bad luck yet. Well, he's right. Every time he goes out there, he's just racing with so much confidence, and it's difficult to see anybody passing him, to be honest. He's now got a pretty handy lead up his sleeve, around about 1,200 or 1,300 points up his sleeve, and they're going to have to work hard to catch him.
Now, of course, this season has seen a lot of great new sponsors coming on board, and as a promotion today, you're at the McDonald's store in and around the Niora area, as once again, it's good to see drivers and their cars out mixing with people, promoting the sport as well as promoting, of course, your great sponsors.
Well, Craig, that's one of the prerequisites for having McDonald's on board as a sponsor, was that we had to do the public appearances, which nobody dislikes doing. Let's face it, if you can do it somewhere like Macca's, where you get to eat some good product as well, to munch on a Big Mac while you're showcasing the sprint car, and we've got Andrew Shirley's car here and Darren Jensen as well here doing the promotions, so it's not a bad thing, and it's good for our sponsors, as you said.
Also, with the announcement of sponsors coming along, is one of the men who's become familiar with sprint car racing in this country, and indeed in the United States as well, is country music singer and Golden Guitar winner Adam Brand. And he will be making a few appearances of his own this time at the racetrack.
Yeah, we didn't expect that Adam would have any time, obviously, but it seems that his schedule's been freed up a little bit in the last couple of weeks. So his new album is finished. It's due for release on the 14th of January. It's called Built for Speed, and he's now found himself, I think he's playing New Year's Eve, he's playing a concert in Sydney, and then the first thing on New Year's Day morning, he's going to jump on a plane, head down to Melbourne and come with me to Warrnambool. He'll also do Mount Gambier and Newcastle, Lismore, Queensland, and probably Newcastle as well for the final. So it's great to have him on board, and the fans are just loving seeing him being involved.
He is a real Speedway fan too.
Yeah, he's not pretending. he's not just writing about sprint cars because he thinks it's a good market for people buying his albums. He really does love sprint cars and sedans, anything really on dirt. He absolutely loves it. And, of course, the big news for Adam is that he's driving in the V8 Brutes next year. He secured a ride with the Pro Car Series, driving in the Brutes for every round. So he's not just a boy that sings about it. He loves to live it too.
A problem for Pro Car over the last few weeks has been a bonus for yourself with Pro Car moving over to Speed Week and yourself jumping into the commentary booth one more time.
Yeah, you've noticed that, have you? Man, good help is hard to find, isn't it? I've had a really good time calling the Brutes, actually. I'm looking forward to, hopefully there's a commitment there for me to do it on a grander scale for next year, and I've really enjoyed it. I guess if you can make a living out of talking about race cars, it's got to be a good thing, doesn't it?
It is indeed. It's a tough job, but somebody has to do it.
Absolutely, mate. Right. And looking at today, when we go into tonight at Nyora, Craig, it's a track that's very narrow. It's like a hairpin, really. It's got two very tight corners at the end of the straightaways and very hard to race hard. But one of the guys I think is going to go really well is young Queenslander Darren Jensen, who's a plumber by trade and a very hard charger by night. He unfortunately was one of the many guys that blew a right rear tyre very early in last night's main event. He's actually standing right here next to me. Would you like to have a chat with him?
Yeah, we'd love to have a chat with Darren.
Well, mate, well, it's great to talk to you, and happy new year to you, Craig, and thanks for all your support, mate, and I'll pass you over to Darren Jensen right now.
Wade Ornge, joining us on the line there. Nyora Raceway is where the World Series sprint car action is set to take place this evening. And, of course, as we said, one of the younger fellows that's making his way in the World Series is Darren Jensen. Darren, we caught up with you when you were racing over in Perth, and you were really starting to come to grips with the whole World Series scene. How have you found it now? At about the halfway point in the series and the championship, how have you been enjoying yourself?
Good, Craig. Yeah, like, certainly been enjoying ourselves. I mean, we've had a few real good nights. I mean, fourth's the best we've finished, but I mean, like, that's reasonably good for us with the field. The only thing we're disappointed, we've had three DNFs, one of those being last night.
The DNFs are a hard thing to take, particularly when it's something as simple as a right rear tyre going, and when your crew chief comes up to you, it's your fault. It's no one else's fault that the right rear tyre blows out.
No, that's right. I mean, sort of, with the World Series rules, with the tyre rules, I mean, we've opted to run the American races and do the right thing by them. We had the hardest tyre they could have, and I mean, I feel bad that I blew it for all the guys that helped me, but I mean, like, when guys like Donnie Schatz and Darren Maggs and all those guys blow them, I mean, sort of, you got to just realise that tyre wasn't hard enough.
Mm. It's an interesting problem to have when you predominantly race on clay circuits too, to get back onto the dirt, which is where, you know, racing started.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, like, oh, I enjoy it. I always seem to go well on the slick tracks. I don't know, maybe it's just throttle control or something, I don't know. But, I mean, everyone's on the same even thing, and, I mean, the only thing that's bad about it, I guess, is the dust and the rubber for the fans. It's about the only down thing about it.
Mm. Now, of course, heading off to Nyora tonight, have you had much experience with that Victorian circuit?
No, I've raced here twice. Honestly, don't even remember how I went. Probably, I know I made the A mains, but sort of just midfield, I'd say. But I'm a lot more confident this year. I mean, I've got Rob and Kathy Hart from America helping me tonight. Hopefully, sort of, that'll help us and we can just be on it a bit more.
For yourself, your plans to finish off the World Series, obviously, but what do you do in the off-season?
In the off-season, I mean, it's sort of just, we build all our own wings and we do a lot of our own Nerf bars and make as much of the stuff as we can. So we get on top of that, like for World Series. Normally, I also buy all my stuff in America, so it's normally a trip to America and a bit of work and sort of just spend a bit of time at home because, I mean, you don't get much time through the year to spend at home when you're racing.
And for people who see the sprint cars, particularly watching them through the television and see just how quickly they can get upside down and into trouble, what sort of spares do you have to carry with you? Because obviously you can't just, you know, duck home and pick up more stuff. So what do you have to keep on board?
On board, we've basically got the race car we race. We've got a second one in pieces, just simply for positioning in the trailer, like so it can be put away. We got a spare motor in the trailer. Then all the consumable, like Nerf bars, wheels, axles. I mean, we keep three or four of those spare. And what I've done, I'm lucky. I got Ray Scott, and that helped me from Scott's Transport. I've got a wing sitting in Melbourne, and I've got some in Brisbane. I've got parts in Sydney. I mean, just so that when you are away, it just helps us because, like I said, we can make it in the off-season and just save us buying it off people through the year.
I guess that's one of the things that does become fairly hard to manage throughout the season is just what sort of inventory to keep on hand, particularly starting in the west and then working your way further east when you're based up north there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, sort of, I've been really lucky. I'm very happy with what we've heard. We haven't heard a lot at all. I mean, but yeah, you just don't know. I mean, you just don't know what you're going to hurt on what night. So, I mean, it's just, you've got to have everything you can with you.
And promotional-wise, what have you thought of the World Series? You're doing a day-to-day at McDonald's?
Yeah, we're at McDonald's in Cranbourne now and sort of, like, talking to some people here. And it's great. I mean, like, the promotion this year with Wade Aunger and David Lander, like, with World Series is, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I've been associated with World Series a couple of years before this, and it was sort of going down a little. But, I mean, this year, it's just great. I mean, like, this year will make it better for next year because, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of these tracks only get to see us once. But, I mean, I can't see how anyone could be unhappy with the show. I mean, that has to come back and bring more people back next year, I'd like to think.
Do you get a lot of people coming up to you with the cars on display and saying, gee, I went to the races as a kid, but I didn't realise this is where it's at now?
Yep. There's so many people that don't know our sport. And it is a great sport. I mean, it's, yeah, anyone who goes, if you see a good night of sprint car racing, I mean, there isn't a lot better. I mean, sort of, and the field that World Series got together this year, I mean, like with, you know, American, Donnie Schatz, Brad Furr, Max, Brooks, Skip, all those guys, I mean, like, you're not going to see better sprint car racing in Australia.
Mm. Of course, also in the middle of the sprint car season and World Series season, you have a couple of huge races, one coming up on Australia Day weekend, which, of course, is the Victorian swing through with the Grand Annual Classic, and, of course, one of the greatest drivers in the world, Danny Lasowski, out in force.
Yep. I mean, that would probably be the most prestigious race of Australia. Like, I mean, for anyone to qualify for or win, because, I mean, look, it's like the World Series, only you've got even more of the world's best. I mean, like you said, you've got Danny Lasowski, you've got more Americans, you know, like Tommy Tarleton, and I think there's even more World of Outlaw drivers coming. I mean, there'll be probably 70-odd cars for that show. I mean, so that's just going to be brilliant racing.
It is really becoming our Knoxville Nationals, isn't it?
It is. That's what the Grand Annual Classic is. I mean, it's just an unbelievable race. I mean, that... I'm getting goosebumps talking about it now because, I mean, like, honestly, there's, like, 70 cars. There's that much fan sort of and crowd participation. I mean, like, they have a fan appreciation day. They have everything for the fans. I mean, that's why, God, that's just a race. I mean, I talk to people in Brisbane, Perth. Everyone goes to the Classic. All the diehards go to the Classic, and it's getting bigger and bigger every year.
Mm. And, of course, for yourself, getting ready for the Classic in the midst of the World Series Championship, I guess you have to balance up. Do I save anything for the couple of big events like the national titles and the Grand Annual, or do you just run it all hard for the World Series?
Oh, no, I mean, like, sort of, especially myself. I mean, I'm probably one of the lower budget guys doing it, I guess. I mean, sort of, not a sympathy thing or anything. I mean, like, yeah, we run our old motor as much as we can. I mean, we've had it in for these last six nights that we probably should. I mean, like, we need our good motor fresh for the Classic and the Australian title. And like, the World Series tracks where it really matters. I mean, we'll put it back in for Warrnambool and Mount Gambier and places where you do need the horsepower.
Well, Darren, thanks very much for your time today, and we wish you all the best with Racing Nyora, and, of course, onwards then through the rest of the championship, and, of course, the two big ones coming up, the Grand Annual Classic at Warrnambool, and, of course, the national title, not to be sneezed at Parramatta.
Yep, no, it's been great talking to you, Craig.
Robert Chadwick, you've had a very interesting season campaigning the Mitsubishi Magna. What plans have you got for next season?
Next season we'll continue to campaign in Class D. That's where the Magna sits, and we're dedicated to driving the car we build in Australia, so it will be another Magna. Whether it's the same car or we go to a new model is dependent on what Pro Car permit us to do, but we'll certainly be back with the first race next year being Adelaide 500, which is our home event. We'll be there with bells on.
Mitsubishi Electric have been a sponsor of yours all this season, and obviously you'll be looking for Mitsubishi Motor Corporation to also give you a hand.
Yes, Mitsubishi Electric came on board in 97 when we first started GTP. They've been with us every year and they're excellent supporters of us. This year they came on board as naming rights sponsor. And next year they hopefully will continue with us. But yes, we're also bringing Mitsubishi Motors on with some in-kind support and everything helps.
This season, how have you seen how the championship's developed over the last 12 months where we've seen some big changes in how it's run?
Big changes in other areas. Unfortunately, if you look at our area, it's probably a little negative. We've got less cars running. We're working hard with Procar to try and rectify that, but just at the moment, I think we're in a bit of a tenuous position. But with B coming back to join the class, it'll give us more cars on the field. And if the TV package comes together as we're being told it will, yeah, I think it'll go forward again.
And for the development of the series, what would someone who's probably racing at club level now have to do, money-wise and commitment-wise, to be able to step up and move into the base level, maybe an E or a D class car for the Procar series?
Commitment-wise, the biggest cost is your fees and travel. Once you're at the circuit running the cars, they're pretty economical to run. So once you're there, you've got your crew there. They're good cars to run. If the exposure's there and you're running a national championship, yeah, it's a good package. But the step up is quite a different one. But you're also talking a different league in sponsors and things like that. People recognise the series and they're prepared to put money in. So, and if anybody's thinking of doing it, go for it.
And if there's any sponsors out there, give you a call.
Oh, certainly, all the time. But no, look, we've been very happy. We've got sponsors who have been with us for 5 years. They're happy, we're happy, so it's a good relationship that continues forward.
And with Mitsubishi, they've got dealers all over the country. Does that help when you are travelling for garaging cars and perhaps spare parts
yes.
in an emergency?
Well, we carry a lot of spares ourselves, but yes, any time we do need some help, the dealers are always most helpful in giving us parts and labour, etc. So, it's great to have that backup.
Robert, congratulations on this year, and we wish all the best for the 2002 series.
Thanks very much. We'll see you next year.
David Ratcliffe, one of the favourites in the sports car GT Performance Class B. This year, quite an interesting year. I remember talking to you, I think it was at Canberra, when you had a couple of good runs, but it's been up and down.
Yeah, we've had a few problems with the car this year. There's a couple of weaknesses in it that sort of showed themselves up during the year, so we had a couple of minor engine failures, but we see that we've got that sussed out now, so far so good.
Plans for next season?
This stage we're going legend racing.
The motorcycle engine size,
yes, yeah,
48 coupes, I think.
Yeah, we just had a look at one the other day, and one came up for sale, so I bought an FJ Halton. So at this stage of the game, we're going to go and play with those for something to do.
A bit of a change in size and performance.
Well, it is. They're fairly quick, actually. I got a video on the other day and watched that, and they're fairly quick. Don't know if the old fella will be able to keep up with them, but anyhow, we'll just see how we go. They look like a lot of fun though, and everybody's the same, so should be nice close racing.
What have you thought about the GT season this year?
Been a little bit disappointed, to tell you the truth. There's a couple of cars in here which I don't believe are, you know, production cars, and I reckon it's tainted the class, unfortunately, so I'm not too happy about it.
It's been interesting to see how the standalone meetings have gone throughout the year with the street races that you've been supporting, as well as other categories that you've supported. What have you thought about the variation and the different races you've had?
Well, the variation of the circuits has been good, but I mean, there's nothing like, you know, running in front of a crowd, and sort of Adelaide and Indian events like that have been really good. But the standalone ones, Wakefield was good, but the others have, you know, probably been a little bit of a disappointment, but that's just part of the package, I guess.
And do you think you would look at opportunities perhaps to run events like Sandown in the future, where there's two drivers and a bit different parity and rules?
Well, if we do get, you know, different parity and rules and everybody's running a production car, yeah, the long distance races are good fun, you know, brings in a, you know, completely different elements into it, etc. So, you know, we'd certainly look at those, but the, you know, Procar, unfortunately, has got to look at the entry fees. I mean, you know, $6,000 to run 2 hours of Bathurst is just, you know, plainly ridiculous. I mean, I love driving Bathurst, but not for $6,000.
Well, David, all the best for the future, and I guess people can look out for your hurtling around in a little FJ Halton. We just hope you're not claustrophobic.
No, they are a bit tight, but once you get into them, they're all right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we go. I think the young guns in there are obviously going to be quicker than the old blokes, but anyhow, it'll be good fun.
Tony Quinn, congratulations. A fairly interesting year.
Yeah, I didn't really intend to do the whole series, really. I didn't sign up to do the whole series. I just was going to do it race by race or just do the major ones. But I think I was lying third in the championship at Canberra, and I got, you know, it was I just had to carry on. But hopefully next year, I had hoped next year to be able to do more testing. So I don't do any testing. I've never driven around Oran Park before. And I think to be serious, you have to be doing some testing.
What was your background before you started racing in the Nations Cup?
Well, a long, long time ago, maybe as you were being conceived, I'm not sure, I used to race Formula Fords in Scotland, and it was pretty good. But I got taught a big lesson there. I just wasn't good enough. And then I gave up and went and got married, children, emigrated, business, house. A couple of years ago, did Targa and did very well at Targa and got back into it. But I bought this car for Targa. That's what I bought it for. But then, you know, I said, oh, do you want to do Porsche Cup? And I did a race there and then our Nations Cup. So
just got a bit beaten.
Ah, I think so, yeah. And also, to be honest, the exposure that we get from it has been really good. And we're going to further commit to the motorsport industry for next year. I mean, we've already done a deal with the V8 team, and, you know, because I think that's where the main circus is. But I'll be running again next year. Maybe a few other cars will be carrying VIP as well. So it's been very good.
This has been quite a good year for Procar as well. They've been able to build on the series. And through all the strife, controversy also breeds great publicity.
I think so, but in my opinion, it's been awfully unfair. I mean, I've been viewing it from midfield, if you like, and they talk about, and I don't want to raise the issue, but they talk about parity, but it hasn't been there this year. And I think now that this year's over, and there's no more excuses, you know, we've been promised that parity will be parity next year. I think it'll be a lot better for everybody.
Obviously, as a racer, you'd like to see as many people as possible in the field, and with the talk of the new cars coming in.
I reckon that that's been part of the problem this year with the parity issue, is that we could not afford to lose anybody. We needed every car there, so nobody could be upset. But I think the best thing that could happen is if we have 25, 30 cars next year, then we'll see some parity. I reckon that's what we need.
And for yourself, you'll continue to campaign your Porsche?
This car's sold, I think. And I'm getting one of the new Carrera Cup cars.
The new homologations and all the trick bits?
Whatever they are, yeah, the new.
You're the driver, not the engineer.
Yeah, I'm nothing like an engineer.
Well,
I'm a pet food maker. I make pet food. That's what I do.
Yeah. Congratulations. The win today you would have been happy with. And you've certainly been up towards the front in a number of the races throughout the year.
Well, I mean, if you look at that race just finished, I was hanging on to Jimmy pretty well. I mean, I don't think his tyres were very good.
You were looking at the side of his car as much as the back.
I think just a little bit more practice and I could have given... I didn't want to put him under a lot of stress and strain. Because I knew this. Well, I think his championship would have been sewn up.
Well, Tony, I've got to ask you, the 43...
It's how old I was last year. That's it. I'm 44 this year.
So but next,
next year I'd like to go with number 5. Because I've finished 5th in the championship. So I reckon I'll go with number 5. I'd like to move up. Yeah, no, 43's got no sentimentality to me whatsoever. I'm sorry. There's no big story, that's just how old I was. And unfortunately, it's no big thrill going to 44 next year. I might be better going to 45, just a safe change in the year after.
Thanks for your time today, and good luck with the 2002 season.
No, it'd be great, and I'll be back after a good long sleep.
Well, Peter Floyd, you've enjoyed another season in the Big Beast. How do you go every race meeting, just going out there, looking at all these rice burners and seeing how much more nimble they are, but realising that they get me in a straight line and I can do a lot of damage to you?
Yeah, look, I thought hard about what car I was going to race this season, and it was a toss-up between maybe an Evo or the Commodore. But I decided to go with the Commodore. There are a lot of Evos already out there, and Ed was the only one currently racing a Commodore. So I decided to go with the Commodore. It's a good fun car to drive, lots of grunt and what have you. But a lot of the circuits really don't suit the Commodore. Places like Adelaide, Canberra we did pretty good. Bathurst, obviously, the car goes well there. Really suit the big heavy car, but a place here like Oran Park, so many changes of direction, it's such a big heavy car and it's under-tired, it really struggles.
What was your racing background before you moved into GTP?
I've only been racing 3 years. I started off, I did a one-make series with Paul Pickett in his Daewoo Lanoses. Then I raced an RX-7 last year in GTP and Commodore this year. And next year I hope to step up to Nations Cup and race the new Monaro in Nations Cup.
It's a pretty big step up, but a pretty busy year for you. You also got to go over the 24-hour at Nürburgring.
Yeah, in Nürburgring. That was a real experience, that one. That's a tough track. It's 20-odd K long and a couple of hundred corners in it. Takes a lot to learn that one. But no, I really enjoyed it. It's a shame we didn't make it to the end. We comped out at the 23-hour, 35-minute mark. I hope to go back again next year and do it again, because it was a real fun event and really enjoyed it.
I guess it does show the ability where production car racing can give you entries overseas if you wanted to take it that far.
Oh, of course. And I only came back 2 weeks ago from Italy, where we raced in a six-hour Gold Cup race in Vallelunga, and that was a good fun in a Porsche. They're an awesome car.
And it was a Porsche spec or just a general production car race?
No, it's a GT race. NGT was the class we were in, racing a Porsche GT3 RS, the 2001 spec GT car.
And what sort of field numbers there?
They had a field entered of around the 50-odd, but I think they're only 34 or 35 actually started the race.
Still a good number of cars.
Oh yeah, look, you're out there mixing it with prototypes and all sorts of stuff, so yeah, good fun.
And of course making the step up to the Nations Cup, obviously it's a fairly big, not only commitment, but budgetary commitment as well.
Oh yeah, sure, you've got to spend more as you go up the ladder. You've got to spend more on cars and preparation and what have you. But really, that's the premier sort of semi-production GT class here in Australia, and you know, if you want to be in that class, you've got to spend the money.
And what about your Commodore now?
Well, we won't have Monaros ready for the first race of the Grand Prix, so they're probably going to let some Class A cars run at the Grand Prix with the Nations Cup cars just to fill up the field. So we'll probably run it there. And then if my Monaro's ready from Clipsal on, then I'll probably lease this out to someone else to run.
So we'll still be seeing the blue and red beast in the GT performance category for next year?
Oh yeah, definitely. It'll be there, yeah.
Well, good luck for the off-season. We look forward to seeing the Monaro as it develops along.
Okay, thanks very much.
Greg Folletta, co-driver with Cody Cocker in the Australian Group N Championship, and we're just saying 4 years you've been the champion team together in Group N. It's seems like it's gone so quickly.
Oh, it has. It has for us especially, but I guess on this camp we were talking about what we've learnt and what we understand about motorsport in particular, and when you think about it, like from our very first rally with Subaru, we've grown a lot over those 4 years, and you know, there's we basically started with Subaru as like a very much an amateur team, and we used to get there and prepare the car ourselves and do all the work, and you know, it was just a sort of a hobby. But since we've been with Subaru, like the focus has been on totally on Cody as a driver, so it's all he's had to look at is driving. And for me, my role is to make sure that as a driver he is as happy as he can be. So
that's something that a lot of people who don't follow rallying probably don't understand, the importance of a co-driver. And of course we've seen Nicky Grist being sacked from Colin McRae after 7 years of their involvement together, or 5 years of their involvement. They've been arguing amongst themselves since that rally of Acropolis rally, but two at a Rally Australia, they're blaming Nicky Grist for Colin McRae not being at a presentation on time.
Yeah, it can be very, very hard for a co-driver. You're in the unenviable position of I've only been able to make a mistake, I guess, and it's not, the co-driver can't get in the car and take a risk and make the car go fast. All he can do is make a mistake and make you lose a rally. So it's that's one of the hardest things you've got to come to terms with as a co-driver. But you still have to, you have to look at the overall picture, and as a co-driver you actually play a strong role as a coach. So just like a coach can influence a football team and their results, so the co-driver can also influence the driver and his results. And you're the person in the car, so you've actually got the closest look on how a driver's performing and can give him the best appraisal for his performance.
Knowing what drivers are like though, when things start to go pear-shaped, it's always make sure the left side hits. How do you get over the nervousness of that?
That's an occupational hazard. It's not something that I think I'm not really happy about, and most co-drivers aren't, but you know, unfortunately it's the reality of the job. So it's and that's sometimes a bit hard to stomach because you're in the seat that's got the most risk, but at the same time, you know, you're not really the guy that's the focus
of control.
You're least control, and you're not always, the car's usually built up around the driver as well, so you're not like the prime focus of the team. So, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, that's a balance that's a bit hard to chew, but, you know, you can't be everything in life, can you?
And, of course, you can end the rally as quickly as the driver because all you need to say is left instead of right.
Yeah, but then it's going to go pear-shaped and he's going to put my side in first, so you don't really want to do that.
For yourself, I know Cody has done this course on previous occasions. What are you gaining from, or what are you hoping to gain from being here at the AIS?
My main focus of this course is to try and learn how to be more of a professional coach. Like the Institute obviously trains the elite athletes in Australia and also the elite coaches, so I'm trying to take out of it what I can learn or what skills I can apply as a coach in the car and use that to try and make sure that we get the most out of Cody. And so it's a unique opportunity for me to do that. And I'm also in the car, I'm also the athlete as well. Like, I have to concentrate as hard as he does. So fitness, nutrition, mental preparation is just as important for me as what it is for Cody, the driver.
Of course, here in Canberra, it's a hotbed of rallying. We're on the East Coast. We're probably the capital of rallying in Australia, with so many people just growing up in the forest in and around Canberra and cutting their teeth there. Do you feel when you come here for an Asia-Pacific round, do you feel that it is a rally town?
Oh, absolutely. Like, the atmosphere of Canberra and the rally of Canberra is absolutely fantastic. Now, it's really special to us because of the involvement of Subaru in the rally. So it's like king for a day. You know, there is no other rally that we do that gives us the same excitement as what we get here rallying in Canberra. So we absolutely love to come here, and it is where Neil Bates grew up, and it's the most accessible rally in terms of getting to the roads, and the roads are, you know, they've got the most variety, and there's that mineshaft stage. Like, you don't spend as much time in the air in any other stage in Australia. Like, that is, it's unbelievable. We get to the end of that and it's pumping.
For a co-driver, sitting there just instructing the driver what to do, making sure that you're basically giving him as clear a track as what you can possibly, and getting him on the right half of the road if you know that part of it's bogged. How important is it for you to be able to not look up, just to be able to focus on the notes and to know just by how the car's moving where you are?
It's a skill that it's very important for the co-driver to be able to feel the car and concentrate on the notes. One of the early skills that you learn is that when things do start going wrong is to keep your focus on the notes, because drivers of significant talent often get themselves out of those situations, and it's usually the corner, two corners beyond that, which is where you're going to have an even bigger moment, and that's potentially going to be, you know, a much worse accident or take you out of the event. So you've got to learn to try and remove yourself from what's going on around you and the fear of what's going to happen, and just focus on the notes and make sure that on that point on the road that you're coming to, that the driver gets the next piece of information that he needs to negotiate it.
It's probably the hardest thing in motorsport when a driver is getting all the credit for doing it, but in rallying it seems like the co-driver not only is the coach, but in a lot of cases he's also the marketing man, the promotions man, and having to do all the real background work that even gets the car to the first stage.
Yeah, so I'm a bit more fortunate than that, because in a professional team like Subaru, they let me concentrate just on the duties as a co-driver. But the duties of a co-driver are to very much support the driver and make sure the driver only has to focus on one thing, and that's driving the car. So there's a hell of a lot of work that you're doing behind the scenes, trying to make sure the flow of everything is happening. So, you know, Cody can almost switch his brain off between stages, which is what he does, which is why I have to drag him around by the collar. But him switching his brain off between stages gives him a chance to relax and prepare for the next stage, because, like, rallies take, you know, the Rally of Canberra's 3 days. It happens over a long time. So it's not like circuit racing where you've only got to have your endurance for a shorter period of time.
Yeah, it's 15 minutes and then you're done.
And then you're done. In rallying, you've got to, like, be able to switch on and off, on and off, on and off over 3 days. So you need to be able to relax and need to be able to get that time to get yourself back together. I have to be a bit more resilient because I've got to keep going in between those times when we're not on stages.
obviously for any driver, the pinnacle is to get into the World Championship. Now, when you and Cody started together, you were seen as the development team for Subaru. Four championships later, you're not the young development team anymore. Is there opportunities? Is Subaru looking at what you two are doing to perhaps move on?
Yeah, we're talking with Subaru about that. Our immediate goal is to try and do more World Championship events. You need to understand the geography of those events if you're ever going to succeed at them. So we're talking with Subaru about the opportunities to try and do that. World Rally Cars are obviously the other goal that we have very much in our mind. So, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that the World Rally Cars still are able to compete in Australia, because like we're going to be the next people waiting in line to try and get that position. And they are, like, you know, the ultimate vehicle when it comes to rallying. And we really, you know, we've got those two goals in our minds. And it's always a difficult balance. You've got to balance that with what you can do in Group M. We've proved that we can produce really good, reliable results in Group M, which is very appealing to a sponsor. So you've just got to negotiate your way through all that.
With Group N, of course, one of the masters of Group N is, of course, Ed Ordinski. He is well known, unfortunately his co-driver isn't, but he's well known for being able to get the maximum performance out of a production car. How do you go when you are matching up against teams with such experience?
You've really got to just rely on your own experience. We've been in the game now for a few years, so we're starting to learn some of the tricks as well. Ed's the master, so you know he's the guy that's really, as much as it's been hard to beat him, he's also been the guy that's been there pushing us on. And it's like anything almost in life, you can always get to the next level. Like there's always someone that can do something better than what you can, and you can always equal that person and then beat them if you apply yourself. And so all we're doing is we're using Ed as the benchmark, and then we're trying to make sure that we're one step ahead of him. And that's just really, it's about applying the skills that you learn in a course like this Camp of Champions. It's about listening to everybody around you. It's about talking to Ed and trying to work out what he's doing so that you can copy it and then modify it to make it a little bit better as well.
What about Asia Pacific? Because with the Asia Pacific series, it is obviously a good way of getting your names out and about a bit further.
The Asia Pacific Championship is very much a goal of Possum's. He wants to get the team out and doing that championship. He realised that last year. This year was a bit more of a struggle, and we couldn't get there. But Possum's got a lot of loyalty to that championship. It owes a lot to him. You know, he cut his teeth there, and he got his first factory drive in that championship. So we want to see that championship grow, and our team, or Subaru Australia, Possum Ball Motorsports, are all working towards trying to get that championship, you know, up and going, and hopefully getting a car in there.
Well, Greg, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. We look forward to seeing you back here for the Subaru Rally of Canberra, and I know the huge contingent of New South Wales WRX owners love to see yours and Possum's car right up towards the front.
Yeah, we're very much waiting to get back here, and we want to see a big cheers next year when we get out there in our Subaru. We'll be loving it.
Thanks.
James Cressy is one of the leading young drivers in New Zealand. I had an opportunity to catch up with him whilst he visited the Marsh Driver Training Program at the AIS, and started by finding out how he got involved in motorsport.
I started when I was 8 in go-karts, moved into Formula Fords when I was 14, and I've come over to Australia now to race Formula 3.
First New Zealander to be selected in the Marsh Program?
I think so, yeah. I won it as part of a scholarship, Bruce McLaren scholarship I won in New Zealand, which went with the Formula 4 Championship. Sent me over here to the AIS and also to the Formula 1 McLaren factory for a week over there, which was really good.
What was the biggest eye-opener, firstly, being here at the AIS with the elite of Australia's sporting talent?
Yeah, it was really good. It's a lot more than what I expected. I learned a lot. It was really good at Marsh and AIS to let us come here for the week. I think it would definitely help.
And the weekend with the McLaren organisation, I guess that was just an eye-opener at what money can certainly buy in motorsport.
Yeah, that was just amazing. It was a lot of money's wasted, but it was just amazing. Just what happens there, 800 staff working just for two cars at the end of the day. It's really good.
And what was something you were able to gather out of what they were doing?
The mechanical side of things, not so much. I mean, I went through every part of their shops, like fabrication and electrical, things like that, but I think the main benefit was just meeting all the people, and I got a lot of contacts in Europe, which will help, hopefully.
Obviously, racing the open wheelers, the goal is to get into Formula One, and having New Zealand and Bruce McLaren having come from there, it obviously does show that they are still considering their New Zealand roots.
Yeah, that'd mean a lot to New Zealand if another New Zealand driver did get in with a McLaren or even two Formula One. It would be really amazing for them.
For yourself, obviously Formula One is the goal. How are you setting about getting to that?
I'd like to do Formula 3 this year in Australia. See how that goes, see where we end up for the next few years. But, I'd like to end up there.
Formula Ford New Zealand as compared to Formula Ford in Australia, how competitive is it?
I think it's the same. A driver anywhere is going to be as good as a driver anywhere else. We're running the same cars. Engines are fairly similar. Like, I think you guys run a different cam to us. There's always a train of eight in our championship just crossing the finish line within like half a second of each other. Yeah, anyone really could have won it.
Across the ditch, motorsport is a very integral part of New Zealand life, with Western Springs. Everyone in Auckland's been there at least once, and of course Australia going over there to Pakahoe with the V8s this year was probably also a bit of a help in lifting the profile.
Yeah, I think it's done a lot for motorsport in New Zealand. It's slowly starting to get a lot bigger. Last few years it's been quite quiet, but now they've got every Sunday they've got motorsport on TV, and your V8's coming out, it's going well.
And for yourself, racing Formula 3 in Australia, will you now base yourself here, or will you be actually traveling across?
Probably not, no, because there's a month really between every round. It's cheaper to fly back and back and forth than try to live here for a month.
Yeah. What do you do for a cross back home?
What was that?
What do you do for a cross?
I used to be labouring for a brick company, and I've just moved into making trusses, roofing trusses.
And how have you gone meeting up with all these tin top fellas and fellas that like dodging trees and all the other weird and wonderful things you do see in motorsport?
Yeah, no, it's been good. They're all really nice guys. It's been really good to meet them all. I didn't know anyone before I came here. It's been good.
And you've been enjoying the great weather that the Rugby Sevens champions have been able to bring?
Yeah, it's been really good. The weather in New Zealand the last few weeks has been rain. It's been really bad.
I suppose you went and checked the home of Australian rugby, the Bruce Stadium, out as well?
Yeah, well, I think we had a little sort of look at that.
Anyway, congratulations. Glad you have enjoyed your stay here, and all the best for 2002.
Cool, thank you.
Well, Graham Alexander, after an interesting season this year and a Bathurst win eventually, what will you be doing during the off-season preparing for a new GTP challenge?
Oh, well, we'll just go right through the car and make sure it's go right through it, make sure it's right for next year.
Basically, a lot of us models, a lot of us new developments, of the people coming up and saying, oh, Graham Alexander, we've looked in coverage, or we've seen you at the races.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's a lot of people that just come into my business and say, oh, we've seen you race and such, and people that are not I wouldn't think they were interested in motorsport, say, oh, we've seen your race here, we've seen your race there, so, that's getting around.
Is there much you can do to the Mitsubishi with all the Subarus and the new Subarus out there? Can you draw much more out of these cars?
Oh, there's not much you can do because, the vehicles are all standard. All you do is got to fine-tune the thing within the parameters that you're allowed, make sure that the suspension is working as best you can, and that's it.
And looking forward to a new championship season, I guess.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah. Certainly out.
Oh, it's a bit windy here. Let's try and get... Can I just clip it there?
Yep.
That should protect it.
Coming through there. Coming straight through the shed.
Well, Alan Holgerson, competing... Alan Holgerson competing in the Cameron Class D. It's been an interesting year for you, but quite a successful one.
Yeah, that's right. We've we just came in this category from historic touring cars and jumped in at the deep end, so they say, but the car's been good. We took a couple of wins, took both race wins at Queensland Raceway and at Winton, and the first one here at Oran Park, so it's been a good year.
A category that really is gathering a lot of following, and people can relate to the cars you're driving because
exactly.
They probably own them themselves.
Oh, exactly. These cars that we're driving, Camrys, Magnas, Falcons, Commodores, they're the ones that people drive every day, so they can see how they go on the racetrack, and I think it's opened a few eyes to how good this car is.
Was that what drew you to pro car racing from historics? You wanted to get into a late model, but probably couldn't afford a supercar.
Exactly. It's the next step up. You can do it on reasonable money, and they're simple cars, you know, not thousands of dollars worth of equipment in them, and it's a good step up.
I know Bill Buckle has supported you throughout the year. How important is it that you can go to a dealership and be able to get a sponsorship through them?
Well, they've been fantastic. I actually work for them in the parts department, and they've helped us out tremendously. I mean, they lend us a tow car every now and then, and we do all the work there, and they've been great this year, Bill Buckle's.
Has Toyota been able to give you support with other dealerships around the country?
Yes and no. We house the Camry up between Lakeside and Queensland Raceway at one of the dealerships up there. So they organise that for us, and they've given us a few parts through the year. So, yeah, they've been on board as well.
Mm. And what about for future plans? Is there much development you can do with the Camry?
Well, I've actually sold it this weekend, believe it or not. We're looking to make the next step again. We sort of made this move, and we're thinking of maybe moving up next year. And we're working on a few things, so we'll see what happens.
Any ideas of how high up, though?
I wouldn't like to say yet because there's nothing in concrete, but we'll see how we go.
One of the best pieces of radio that we have ever done on Inside Motorsport was done by our own Peter Norton. I have to apologise to him because there was an award this year that probably should have been his. That, well, it's water under the bridge now, but Peter Norton put together this compilation after Dale Earnhardt's tragic death, and I feel it's a fitting way to end this year's motorsport is to recap a tribute to one of the greatest motorsport drivers in the world that did sadly leave us too soon.
He helped me a lot. And his daddy, too. I saw him back there fighting them off.
I don't really know. I'm not a doctor. I mean, I got the heck out of the way as soon as they got there. I'm fine. Just thinking about Dale and them guys.
He had what I feel were life-ending type injuries at the time of impact. And really nothing could be done for him. He never showed any signs of life and subsequently was pronounced dead.
After the accident and turned four at the end of the Daytona 500, we've lost Dale Earnhardt. NASCAR has lost its greatest driver ever. It's hard to comprehend the statistics sheets for Dale Earnhardt. They're now permanent, but it's real easy to understand that Dale Earnhardt will be a part of this sport for many generations to come.
And Victory Lane, I just couldn't wait. I won the race and I was telling everybody about it, and I just couldn't wait until I got that big grab on the neck and a big hug. I just knew any minute Dale was going to run in Victory Lane and say, "That's what I'm talking about right there." But that wasn't to be. Instead of patting me on the back and having a party with me, he's up there hanging out with my dad. The checkered flag was getting ready to wave. It was three or four cars in a tight pack, and they got together. I want to ask that everyone keep Sterling Marlin in your prayers. Sterling didn't do anything wrong. Sterling was simply racing. And when the checkers waving, nobody's going to let off. But it's the last lap, it's racing. I don't think that race looks like, that wreck looked like to me, a result of anything other than just guys wanting to get to the checkers. And I believe that in my heart. And I hope that, I hope people will remember Sterling during this time too, because, you know, they made contact, there's no denying that, but I did not see that being anyone's fault, just hard racing on the last lap.
When the road gets dark and you can no longer see, just let my love throw a spark and have a little faith in me.
Again, our family, sisters, uncles, cousins, we're all deeply sad by the loss, and appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers, and we'll get through this, and I'm sure you want us to keep going, so that's what we're going to do.
Have a little faith in me.
Everybody deals with this the wrong way, and we appreciate everybody's support. I mean, it really, really means a lot. It makes a big difference when you see the reaction from hundreds and hundreds of people like we have already. And, you know, we appreciate everybody's support, and it's a tough time.
I look forward to catching up with you all in 2002. Please play it safe on the roads, what's left of this holiday season. Thanks for being with us.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.